For 35 years, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation has been dedicated to saving thoroughbred racehorses no longer able to compete on the racetrack from possible neglect, abuse, and slaughter. The oldest and largest charity in the U.S. devoted to racehorses, the TRF makes a promise of lifelong sanctuary to those horses unable to pursue a second athletic career. Unique within the aftercare industry, the horses of the TRF find their second chance in the role of teachers through the TRF Second Chances program, which provides vocational training in 7 correctional facilities across the U.S. The program is Saving Horses and Saving Lives. Learn more at www.trfinc.org, and please use the special In the Money podcast link to donate, trfinc.org/players. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast, brought to you this week by the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine Mile weekend coming up. Can't wait. I'm going to be heading up to Toronto on Wednesday for my first Wednesday night of racing, and then looking forward to having a fun day in Toronto on Thursday. No racing. Maybe catch some Toronto Film Festival action. And then back at the track for Friday, Saturday, and trying to sneak back Sunday as well. If you're a contest player, you're going to want to get involved in this event on Saturday. Live bankroll contest, best hospitality in the business, as far as I'm concerned, at Woodbine. Come join us and check it out. And we thank Woodbine for sponsoring our shows this week. We're going to have some special content later in the week as well. One other quick little housekeeping note. If you're interested in one of our Alive in the Pick 5 In the Money Players Podcast t-shirts, we've got them. The supplies are going fast, though. So reach out to me via the blog inthemoneypodcast.com or hit me up on Twitter at LoomsBoldly if you want those. I gave JK the day off today. He is running around like a nut as usual. We're going to have him later in the week as part of our Woodbine Mile coverage. Sounds like Frank McGowey will be joining us as well for that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Today, in JK's stead, we've got two guests. We're going to start off with a man you're all pretty much going to be familiar with, expert on New York racing, one of the great horse racing Twitter followers. He'll be here in just a minute. And then a little bit later in the show, we're going to have Kim Weir of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation giving us an update on how things went for the TRF this summer and how our partnership between the In the Money Players Podcast and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation is progressing. So without further ado, let's get to our first guest. And now I'd like to welcome back to the In the Money airwaves our friend Nick Tamaro. Nick, what's going on, buddy?
Good morning, Pete. How you doing?
Things are good. You know, it's no secret with this show that the times that I have the most fun are when it's just conversations that I would have had off air with friends anyway that just happen to tie into matters of interest to the In the Money community. And I think that's definitely a part of what's going on today, because we missed you up in Saratoga this year. I feel like I'd seen you there each year for the last, I don't know, half dozen or so. The streak was broken in 2019. So I'll start off just by saying, how are you doing? We missed you at the spa. And how was it not being there this time around?
I'm good. Life obligations, unfortunately, got in the way this year. But I am proud, of course, of what's going on in my personal life. I'm recently engaged, and so that's going well. And then just had a pretty jammed up with work. Made a family trip to Del Mar, so the spa didn't happen. It was my first in 11 weeks that I didn't make it. So it was a long streak that ended. And you can imagine as far as what it was like. I mean, it's a lot less fun than going. But it didn't stop me, of course, from punting in general. And next year certainly will be on the docket.
Well, we'll start off with the hearty congratulations. That's fantastic stuff. I'll have to ask your fiance, is she a racing fan? Is she racing tolerant? Does she sort of look the other way? Where on the spectrum does she fall when it comes to all matters pertaining to horseplay?
I think tolerant. Tolerant's the right way to put it. Willing to take a racing form in her hand and make a few plays, too. So it could be a lot worse.
That's excellent. It sounds like a very similar boat to the one that I'm in. And, you know, we can't get too sad. If you did manage to make it out to Del Mar, it wasn't a summer wasn't a total loss in racing terms. We did miss you at the Spa, and we hope you'll be back. We hope you'll be back sooner rather than later. How did the Saratoga meet go for you in punting terms? Was it a successful one?
You know, it was not, so what's funny in terms of my horse playing life is that it really changed when I stopped as a public handicapper 3 years ago, and you know that made for a little bit more of a challenge in terms of keeping up with the races on a day-to-day basis, and it was just a good spot for me in my own personal life to move away from doing that, and so now you know, making the time to watch replays and not necessarily feeling obligated to handicap every single card, you have to be a little bit more careful about spot playing and making sure that you're staying on top of the things that you need to be in order to be successful. So with all that said, I really have not done well since I stopped as a public handicapper. And I guess a good side of that is that right at the end of 2016, I had this amazingly huge score that was good and certainly gave me a positive ROI for Saratoga for life up to that point. And I've not luckily put too much of a dent into that. But now it was tough sledding. I mean, I found myself getting alive in some good multi-race plays going into the nightcap three or four times and missed every single time. Oh, yeah. So it was one of those where I think to an extent I was on the wrong side of things because of handicapping and on the wrong side of things racing luck-wise. So I'm always glad to have it start. This time I'm kind of glad to see it end.
JK and I were similar in some of the horizontal type plays that we did. It always seemed like there's that one race, and when you're going well and when you're on a heater, that one race that always the photo that goes your way, whatever it is, those seemed fewer and farther between, at least for a lot in our crowd this year at Saratoga. I feel part of me feels like there was a missed opportunity just because I can't remember a Saratoga where there was so much going on in terms of track bias, and I felt like we were supposed to somehow take more advantage of that, and yet personally I didn't feel like I was able to. What were your thoughts in general on the bias this year at Saratoga? Are you sort of with what's become the conventional wisdom about how difficult it was to be down on the inside, or do you have a little bit of a different view?
Yeah, I think that definitely was the case. And unfortunately, I think over the last three meets, we've seen more biased surfaces at Saratoga than we had in a while. And I think that might just have to do with the extreme amount of activity on the surface on a regular basis and maybe a couple of other things maintenance-wise that might be dogging Glenn Kozak a little bit. Because, I mean, I'm somebody who likes to keep it real in terms of what I say about what goes on the racetrack. And for a lot, I mean, many, many years, in fact, I was watching every single race, dissecting every single race for 8 years on a daily basis. There were very, very few track biases at Saratoga. And we saw a number of big inside biases in 2017 and not quite as many in 2018. And then 2019 was really the year of the dead rail. There was a dead rail for really the majority of the meet. And I don't know, I've heard people say different things. I don't really quite know the nuance. I know there are some people who believe that maintaining the surface in order to keep it for safety purposes will often necessitate the rail being dead. But the other thing that I would say in contrast to that is that the surface was extremely fast on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm. So I think it was something that was probably a little bit more random. We do have a tendency to see more dead rails at Belmont than we have in the past. Maybe a little bit more at Aqueduct than we have in the past as well. So it's something definitely to keep an eye on. One thing I will say, and the weather helped out with this, was that we definitely did not have to deal with quite as many extremely biased turf situations as we have in the past, where sometimes you'll get that overwhelmingly parched turf course and the inside just becomes a speedway, which thankfully we didn't have that happen. But yeah, no doubt, it's frustrating when you feel like it's working against you. I think people like us who want to play against it, or play with it, I should say, and want to play the horses who may have been against the grain of the surface, love to see biases moving forward. But it does feel a little bit like now with everybody being so hip to what's going on the racetrack, it's a little tougher to necessarily ferret out something that others might be missing.
And that race design gets so tricky because there were certain riders, even really good riders, who I couldn't predict if they were going to be aware of what was going on in terms of how the track was playing. And I just ended up feeling confused a lot of the days later in the meet, and really, not unlike yourself in betting terms, kind of happy to be able to turn the page and move on. But for you and your bias handicapping, and especially as it pertains to race design, is that something you'll try to do, find a rider who's in tune and maybe give their mounts a little bit of extra credit, or design a trip in your mind with the fact in mind that this jockey knows that maybe the rail is or isn't the place to be?
Yes, it is something that you can factor in. It's difficult, of course, to pinpoint it exactly on multiple occasions. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you know, we saw a lot of really fine riders throughout the meet make some really terrible decisions in terms of where they position their mounts, and in real head scratchers. There are definitely some very, very talented riders out there right now, but they're a little short on the talent of the greats that we've seen from years past. And that really rears its ugly head in some of these occasions. So, you know, with all due respect to the Ortiz brothers, especially to Jose, who was the leading rider at the meet, I mean, he had some terrible big race rides. I thought his ride on Tacitus and the Travers was a little bit out of nowhere. And of course, the Jim Dandy was even worse. And Irad Ortiz, who's arguably the most talented rider going right now, at least on the East Coast, he has had dead rail issues for years. So he found his way to a bad inside a couple of times too. I'd rather find the guys that are a little hip to it. When there's a dead rail, if you find a situation where you think there's going to be pace, as difficult as that is, always gravitate to Joel Rosario. He's going to be making that outside move. He's never going to be down towards the inside, and that's one situation where it can really work out. But it was frustrating, and of course, I guess I sort of alluded to one of the big problems that we have in New York racing right now, which is that nobody wants to lead, and that's a huge, huge issue. And there's a big opening for a jockey or a trainer to expand their business on that circuit by just simply sending the majority of their mounts to the lead. It would really benefit them tremendously. And I was, you know, kind of hoping that Ricardo Santana would be that breath of fresh air, and he did have some moments of it, but some moments really where it didn't pan out. So it was very frustrating in that respect. I think it's tricky, and you want to keep an open mind as much as you can, but you see these things happening on a daily basis, and you do undoubtedly become very jaded.
Yeah. We have seen that in some corners of Twitter. Not so much from you, but maybe occasionally from me, some of the frustrations at the tactics. I'm glad you mentioned the Tacitus ride. This is a funny split to me, where everyone I talk to, even vaguely on the horse race, on the horseman side, we'll call it, are extremely eager to continue to go with Code of Honor over Tacitus, and think that Tacitus has revealed these character flaws, etc. And everyone on the horse playing side can't wait to bet Tacitus back against him, hopefully at a big price in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, or a big-ish price, I should say. I'm going to assume you stand with the horse players on this one and our team Tacitus, or are you getting tired of his act a little bit?
No, I'm not tired of him. No, I actually, look, it might be an unpopular opinion with some people, probably not on the horse playing side, more on the horsey watching side. I mean, with due respect, of course, to Hall of Fame horsemen, I think Bill Mott's done a terrible job with Tacitus. I mean, I think with the blinker machinations and the disregarding what really went on in the Jim Dandy and the Belmont, and sort of playing, you know, see no evil, hear no evil with what actually was happening, which is that the horse was clearly against the grain of the racetrack two times in a row and was done no favors by his rider. And then to put blinkers on to sharpen him and instruct the jockey to ride him forwardly so that he could get close to what was a bad inside, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So he's a very unlucky horse. You know, I joked with, I think it was with Jonathan, I don't know if he said it yet, but I said to him, is there any way that you can arrange for Tacitus to get on the plane with Mucho Gusto and head out to your man in California? Because, I mean, boy, Tacitus in the hands of Bob Baffert looks like he could be a real problem for the handicap division next year. And that's not me advocating for a guy losing a horse, but I guess it is me doing just that. Because I feel like there's a lot of talent that we're just not getting at. You know, and maybe that's me thinking too much of it, and maybe I will ultimately have to capitulate with Tacitus as I did with Elate, that there might just be horses of their generation that are better, but I really don't think so. I really do think he's the most talented 3-year-old, and circumstances eventually going to work in his favor.
I want to see it now. Let me ask you this. Next time, do you want to see the blinkers or do you want to see the blinkers come back off? At this point, I'd say I almost just want to be committed. Okay, this is the strategy. Let's ride him correctly on the surface where that's not going to work against him and let the big horse roll. But what do you think?
Yeah, I guess just leave him on. I guess what you're sort of saying is like we recognize that it might be a mistake, but it's our mistake. So let's just own it and do it, you know. And I guess there's something to be said for that. You know, it was just very precarious to me. And I will say that I saw a clip of his last workout. It looked like he did not have them on, and it also looked like he was kind of struggling to get a channel maker. And I know that he's apparently been a very lazy horse in the morning. I think a lot of people early on in 2019 were against him because we saw some tapes of those workouts where Hidden Scroll was just blowing his doors off, and little did we realize that Tess is just a bad workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly which way he'll go, but I mean, I imagine we'll have something fun in store. He'll have something fun in store for all of us in a few weeks.
Oh, it's going to be it's going to be a fascinating race this year. Hopefully it holds together. Really, for me, one of the races I'm looking forward to the most as we turn the calendar to fall. Speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about Belmont from last weekend. Were you an active participant? And what did you think of the racing that we saw at Big Sandy over the weekend?
Yeah, you know, I obviously there was the racing office and Martin Panza tried something with this turf triple that I really don't blame him for doing so. Clearly, there's been an overwhelming commitment to turf racing made by Naira under his watch. I think it's a little bit of a slippery slope, and you want to be a little bit careful with it. And we really saw a hoard of money committed to a series of races that quite honestly just fell really short of what I think he was hoping for and all of us as fans and gamblers were hoping for. That being said, it got a little bit of European participation into the mix, which, you know, I always like seeing their little interest generated from the other side of the pond. And we saw Spanish Mission win the Jockey Club Derby. But, you know, that didn't look like a $1 million horse race in anything but the purse account.
Right.
It was just a decent group of horses. The American contingent had kind of been weeded out by then, much more so on the Oaks side than the Derby side. And at least it did make for a slightly more interesting weekend of racing-wise for this opening 3-day stint at Belmont, which generally in most years can be pretty dull and quite honestly lifeless because of the aftermath of Saratoga. You know, the horse population is just pretty much wrecked. So that aspect of it was fun. It's too bad we won't see Spanish Mission again this year. I think he's another healthy scratch from the rest of the season, with maybe a goal next year of being the Dubai. So I thought that Edisa was a very impressive winner of the Jockey Club Oaks, and I think it was a good reminder to all of us that when Alain de Royer Dupree sends a horse over, they're generally very well meant, and that was a great ride by Flavian Pratt, who she was able to overcome a very, very sluggish pace and really was just much, much the best. So I thought it was a very impressive effort on her part. What we will continue to see over the next few months is some very, very nice two-year-old racing, and I thought that Todd Pletcher's winner on Saturday, 7 Alpha 6, I believe is the horse's name, who ranged up on the outside and ran down Hemlock for Bill Mott, who coming off the turn looked like he was about 1-10. It looks as if Todd Pletcher's 2-year-old contingent is quite a bit stronger than what we've seen in recent years. And even though Abilene Trail ran poorly for him yesterday in her second start, I think that we're not necessarily going to get to Gulfstream and wonder when the good Todd Pletcher 3-year-olds, 2 turning 3-year-olds are going to show up. I think we've seen them already. And that's something that we'll look forward to over the next few weeks, especially at Belmont. And hopefully the Belmont meet will end up going all the way to the originally scheduled end, which I hear more whispers that might happen depending on how the construction goes.
Interesting.
But as I told Steve Bick, these weekday cards that we've got, they give you plenty of time to get to the beach. So keep that in mind.
So much to unpack there. Let's go back to the turf, the two turf series. Yes, I don't. I mean, the hope of European participation. Cool to see the Aga Khan silks on the Belmont racetrack for sure. But probably long term, something that they're going to want to be taking another look at rather than just running benefits for Euro Group 3 horses is probably not the first thing in mind when the idea was conceived. But what do you see happening? Do you think they'll take another? Is this a one and done? Do you think they're going to take another crack at trying to find a way to rejigger this? Maybe reconstructing the rest of the stakes calendar, you were the first one I saw point out that, especially on the Phillies side, you already have all these dedicated races. And not only do you have all the dedicated stakes races at Saratoga for that division, they even ran an allowance that had a couple of stakes quality runners in Varenka and Catch a Bid. Could it be as simple as trying to gear all of the three-year-old USA guns towards these races, or is this just one that you think they're going to take a do-over on?
It's tough to say, you know, and ironically, you know what the feature is this coming Saturday at Belmont? the pebbles for three-year-old fillies.
Yeah.
So it's for $200,000, because there have definitely not been enough races for three-year-old fillies on the turf over the last couple of months. Yeah, I think spacing might be one part of it. I think they may need to look at putting a little bit more time between the races. The other problem that I think you'll run into, especially on the Oak side of it, is that we don't have a lot of three-year-old fillies that are ready to go 10, 9.5, and 11 furlongs in an 8-week stretch. Yeah, it's going to be very, very hard on the horses that we have domestically. And, you know, Concrete Rose was probably, well, for my money, Adisa would have beaten Concrete Rose on Saturday, but it sure would have been nice to see her try, especially after she won the first two really with great ease. So it's just, it's appealing to an audience that we really don't have here amongst horsemen. And I think that's the risk that you take. So at the very least, I think you might want to change the spacing, may want to eliminate some of the other races that went on during that time. Because you actually made a great point, which in the midst of Saratoga offering the Lake George and the Lake Placid and the Risk Averse, which both of them were eligible for at the time, you had a one other than on opening weekend that sucked up two potential graded stake horses.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Catch a Bid was always going to be sort of brought into it slowly. And I think Chad Brown is probably targeting a race like the Sands Point in a few weeks, but with Catch a Bid, who, you know, might be one of the better horses in that grouping, along with Varenka and some of his other horses that were in that Lake Placid photo. But, you know, there's only so many horses to go around these races. And I think it's a little foolhardy to assume, oh, well, we'll just run them, and, you know, they'll all be pointed there, because unfortunately a lot of people are pointing to softer grade 3 or $100,000 listed stake races at Monmouth or Colonial now, or, you know, those kind of things that might spread it around a little bit. So it was, you know, my point with all of it is that you can't be offering $1 million races where intra-race handle is $2 million. It's just a colossal loss of money. And you can't continue to do that long term. So either something has to be changed, obviously, and it might just deal with recruitment, but it's got to be a little bit different in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot on the show about the sort of ever-shrinking middle class of horsemen, and you think about that money and some sort of series to be packaged some sort of way that rewards. That money's getting distributed to people who run in New York all year round. There's got to be some other, you know, and this isn't just a pile on. We applaud creativity, and you try things, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But I think for our money, it might make sense to try to find a way to distribute that money in a way that more of the people who keep racing day in, day out here in New York get an opportunity to benefit from. I think you'd have to agree that's fair.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I would love to see the $3 million that went into these three derbies committed to a dirt program that might incentivize people to stay in the winter and come back a little bit quicker after the winter, so that we're not looking at four dirt races on a daily basis at Belmont, where the average field size is 6.2.
Yeah.
You know, that I know that seems probably easier said than done, but, you know, there has to be a commitment to that, because, you know, you look through these cards, especially the three cards that have been drawn for the next 3 weekdays at Belmont, and, I mean, where are all of the winter horses going to come from?
Yep.
If this is what we're dealing with right now in terms of dirt horses, I mean, you're talking about 3 days a week at Aqueduct for the whole winter, and Friday and Sunday being eights.
Yeah, it's tough, because trying to find this balance between, obviously they're very committed to this, for lack of a better word, festivalization of racing, but it seems like it's so much at the expense of, I mean, Belmont spring meet after Belmont, it was almost like from a racing fan point of view, you almost didn't need to pay attention until Saratoga started. And I'm not comfortable with that. I don't know what I wish I had the answer, but I'd almost prefer to see them like stop completely for a couple of weeks and find a way that when they do run to be able to do so in a way where they're putting together a product that's just a little bit more worthy of the history of the place. Now, that said, I'm not clever enough to figure out how to do that in a way where, getting back to the horsemen who run here all year round, where they get to benefit. But I don't know. There's probably people smarter than me, and maybe you're one of them, Nick, who could try to think of a way, if we're going to continue to evolve and have the year rotate around these sort of festivals, to make the rest of the calendar support them in a way that promotes the overall health of the industry. Is that a realistic goal, or is it just a fever dream from where I sit?
You know, it feels like it's pie in the sky, but I'd sure like to see it be tried. You know, I'd like to see someone put the effort forth, and if ultimately what we're looking at, and you know, my father reminds me often that after Belmont and before Saratoga in the 70s, they ran at Aqueduct, and the racing did not drop off like it would nowadays, but it clearly was not the same caliber. And maybe that's something that we're supposed to be looking at. Maybe it's just an acknowledged weaker offering for that month to, or so before they get up there that we're supposed to take. And you know, short of Saratoga going to 9 or 10 weeks, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon, you know, maybe that is the approach. And maybe it's just supposed to be a sort of acknowledged kind of cheaper, lower quality offering. And I'd like to see the opposite. I'd like to see it tried where we see something a little bit, maybe a little bit better. And I'd like to see that hopefully through a commitment to a claiming dirt program and really more of a one other than two other than three other than progression on the dirt. But the horsemen have to help out with that too. Yeah. And that's, I think, part of the issue is that these mega stables have the majority of the horses and they don't want to run against each other. They want to also protect their win percentages and their owners. And you have a lot of competing interests. We've just not really seen what the way is to get everybody happy and on the same page.
You can't please all of the people all of the time. That much we know for certain. Well, we went into the weeds there, but it was, again, this is a conversation I'd want to have anyway. While I have you though, Nick, I noticed you were paying close attention to Kentucky Downs. I wanted to get some of your thoughts about this Kentucky Downs meet closing day this Thursday. We talked about bias at Saratoga. It looked like we had a little bit of bias at Kentucky Downs. Not something that we always expect to see that we saw this past weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was very advantageous to be on the front end on Saturday. Did not feel quite that way on Sunday. Maybe not quite as pronounced, but there definitely was an advantage to being forwardly placed. And you want to talk about situations where certain riders pick up on it more than others. That was a great example. Florent Giroux and Jose Ortiz both were very hip to it, and it made a difference right away as they were each forwardly placed with pretty much every mount from about mid-card on Saturday on. And that was very encouraging to see. Of course, because those two were just a little bit smarter than their comrades in the colony. But, Kentucky Downs is a great place for horse players. The takeout's low. The fields are huge. It's pretty much everything that we clamor for throughout the year. I know that I think other groups, depending on their place as stakeholders, may not like it quite as much. But from where I sit, it's a lot of fun, and I'm always going to give them support. I think the key, of course, with the field size and those situations is being careful, being prudent, and betting within your comfort zone. So, I mean, I find myself playing, you know, just maybe small to mid-size win bets and exactas and things like that, and maybe small trifecta plays as opposed to really trying to sink your teeth into it a little bit more like you would at a place where maybe the fields were smaller or you had a greater comfort level, because you can turn a fortune into a small fortune very quickly making big plays in 12 horse races left and right.
Yeah, you have to know. Mike Maloney made the point about, I think it was Mike on our Kentucky Downs preview show, that you can, if you've got the right key horses in certain types of exotics there, you can be a little bit more inclusive, but you need to have somewhere to hang your hat, or else you're just looking at spreading too much and getting yourself into the turn the large fortune into the small fortune problem that you're talking about. You've got to find your comfort zone somewhere along the way. Any horses you saw, Nick, running at Kentucky Downs this past weekend who you thought might be ones you're looking to bet going forward, ones to take with you for the rest of this season?
Well, you know, I think from both turf sprints on Saturday, the horses that come back at Keeneland in the Woodford and the Franklin, the Buffalo Trace Franklin County, I think it's called, I would look for a lot of those results to be reversed. I would take Oleksandra heads up against Morticia again on a more conventional setup. I think Morticia was helped greatly by the track profile on Saturday, and I mean with due respect to Totally Boss, he is not a better horse than Imprimis and a lot of those horses that were behind him. I think he really benefited from an excellent ride. And again, that was Florent Giroux who put him right on top of the pace, and Smart Remark holding on for second in there at 64-1, I think was kind of an indictment of what was going on mm-hmm. on that surface. I thought Simply Breathless was a horse in the ladies' turf that you may want to take a look back. And really, when you're watching replays of these races, do your best to take as many notes as you can and look for anybody who was making a prolonged outside move on Saturday. Didn't seem like being outside was as much of a problem yesterday, but absolutely upgrade those horses at Keeneland, getting back to a more standard type of turf course, because I think we'll see a lot of them come move forward in a big way, and we'll definitely get some prices too.
That's a great note, and I'll just point out one other thing that was talked about on our preview show for Kentucky Downs, the idea of how difficult it is to come off a layoff and deal with those testing conditions. I think horses who came off the bench, ran at Kentucky Downs, going forward might have more of a level of fitness than you'd even expect just for having the one start. That's another angle I'll be taking a look at going forward with a horse like Imprimis and some of the others who tried that difficult feat. Just something to point out. As far as Kentucky Downs shippers go for the rest of 2019, a couple more minutes with you, Nick, and I want to ask you about your contest plans for the rest of the year. Have you punched your ticket yet for either Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge or NHC? Will we expect to see your name in the starting lineup for either of those events?
I have gotten a BCBC at the Belmont Stakes Challenge. I've actually not qualified for the NHC yet, which this is the latest for me since 2015. But I'm more than likely headed to Keeneland in mid-October, which, of course, is a great opportunity to qualify for the NHC. I got my second one there last year. And then the BCBC will happen for sure, obviously having that one entry and hopefully picking up a second between now and then. I made it up to Woodbine for the Woodbine Mile contest last year. Anybody who's considering it, by all means, go for it. You're treated very well. But no Woodbine trip in the cards for me this year. So that's the plan. For as far as the rest of the year goes, I usually try and sneak in. If Gulfstream does a contest in early December, I usually try and sneak one of those in. So that might happen again. Just gives me an excuse to elongate a work trip potentially, or maybe create a work trip that I can then elongate in order to get that done. Don't tell my boss.
A true horse player creating those work trips around NHC qualification opportunities. A thought experiment, Nick, and feel free to be honest about this. Just I think it's a good perspective for people to get. Let's just say alternative universe where things don't go well for you in your on-site qualifying opportunities. Would you consider playing online for an NHC seat if you don't have one already come mid-December?
As long as my bankroll to do it was subsidized by the In the Money podcast.
We'll go partners. I want to get you out there, man.
There we go. More than likely. Okay. Not too much.
Gotcha. But the odd shot or two. You have had success in those formats. I mean, that's the thing. You take the takeout, obviously not nearly as beneficial as when you're playing in a live in an on-site event.
Sure.
In almost all instances. That's why, for those that don't know, that's why I asked Nick that question. But it is such a fun horse player party, and we definitely want to have you there. But of course, that was just a thought experiment. Lots of opportunities between now and then, and we'll be following your progress with interest. Can't let you get out of here without getting a comment from you about The Many Saints of Newark, this Sopranos prequel movie that is in the works. As a Sopranos devotee, is this something you're excited by, scared by? Where are you with The Many Saints of Newark from where we sit?
Very excited. Yeah, can't wait. Thought the scenes in the series itself with Johnny Boy and Uncle Junior in the early days were outstanding, and I can't wait to see how they develop those a little bit. Obviously, it's not quite the same not having James Gandolfini to be involved in it, but I'll tell you, you see some of those images of his son, and in the context of the other cast members, and it's very eerie. So it's I think it's going to be very exciting. I'm counting down the days, and I guess now that we've seen a release date, it's going to be a very slow what, 380 days or so until that takes place, because it's going to be great. I can't wait. My favorite TV show, I mean, everybody who's ever heard me in this format or in general knows my favorite TV show of all time. Nothing's ever come close. And I may have to just, I think this is going to give me a good excuse in the days leading up to it to go back and watch the whole series again, which probably will be about number 6 or 7.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm due for a rewatch myself. Certainly incredibly encouraging that this is a David Chase passion project. And for those who don't know, Michael Gandolfini, James's son, going to be playing the role of a young Tony Soprano. I can't wait. I can't imagine Chase would. It's one of those things that's like you'll sometimes see if a horse shows up in a certain spot, depending on who the trainer is, you know that they're ready. And I kind of feel that way about this movie with David Chase. If he's going to be involved and his name's on it, I don't see it being anything less than good. Let's hope that I'm not being overly optimistic as far as that goes.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, I don't think he would get involved if it wasn't going to be basically perfect. So I'll be shocked if it's really anything less than that. I think we're going to be very pleased. And outside of Michael Gandolfini, there are real cast members in this movie. Vera Farmiga, of course, who's been outstanding in a number of different spots, including The Departed and Up in the Air. And John Bernthal, who was in Wolf of Wall Street, is in there. So it's a good Ray Liotta, of course. I mean, how could I leave him out? I don't even know exactly which role he's playing, but I know whatever he does, he's going to do very well.
I can't wait. All right, we'll talk about that more as we get closer to it. Nick Tamaro is his name. You can follow him on Twitter at NTamm1215. You can hear him weekly on At the Races with Steve Bick. Anything else we should plug for you, Nick?
No, I think that's it. Everybody tune in Friday mornings to hear me talk to Steve, and whenever Pete and Jonathan can handle me ranting for a little bit, back on here.
Thank you, my friend. And now we'd like to welcome back to the show from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, the Director of Major Gifts and Planned Giving, Kim Weir. Kim, how are you today?
Good morning, Pete. It is a beautiful Monday in Saratoga. September is blessing us with sunshine and cool weather, and I'm thrilled to chat with you today.
Excellent. We had so much fun. Thank you again for taking me and Perrin around the backstretch on Saturday. It really helped to sort of transition out of the meet to go back one last weekend. We closed up the house and had an opportunity to see the plant as it's transitioning into its non-use for the winter state, but it was still really cool to get to see a few workers and meet a few friends and get a little bit more of a close-up look at some of the work that you guys do over at the TRF. And so I'll just start with a simple thank you.
Oh, such a pleasure. I so loved it. And Perrin just ate it up. And I love introducing a young, eager fundraiser, as she is, to our horses and to what they're doing behind the scenes. It was a super fun Saturday. Thank you for coming with me.
I don't know if we ever told the story about our Kentucky Derby party back on Derby Day, obviously, and Perrin's first foray into fundraising. We were doing a 50-50 raffle for the TRF. And we went through the first 20 names. And she insisted, Daddy, there's tables over there we haven't talked to. We can keep going. And sure enough, we ended up doing two full shoots of 20 numbers for the TRF. And I think you've got a little protege on your hands there.
Oh, she's a natural. Yeah, she's just my kind of gal, and I so appreciate her efforts. And I've got my eye on her. You know, we're always playing the long game here at the TRF, and she's on the team already in a big way.
She's blonde, she loves horses, and she loves to talk. I think we've got people who are clearly peas in a pot.
Good stuff. Oh my God, so much fun, so much fun. What a fun summer it was. That was a terrific way to sort of put an exclamation point, maybe in a gentle sort of bittersweet way, but to sort of say farewell to Saratoga summer as we welcome the fall. But boy, what a summer it was, Pete. You and JK were amazing. Let me just say, amazing, amazing ambassadors for the horses of the TRF. Heartfelt thank yous from all of us on the team and from every single one of our horses. You killed it.
Oh, you're too kind. We had so much fun with the events that we did, especially the open barn events, which are something that folks who are coming up to Saratoga next year, hopefully you'll be doing them again, because this was just a great family-friendly, amazing experience to get to see the work of the TRF up close, to get to be near horses up close, and to get to see a view of Saratoga from only a couple miles out of town that not that many people get to see. Is this something I know it's early, but is it something you project to be doing again in 2020? And maybe tell folks a little bit more about these open barn events and how they came about.
Sure. No, I'd love to. And first of all, yes, we 100% plan to continue them. They are just, they're so much fun for us, but they really do sort of make the magic happen, because what the TRF Open Barn is, as you've experienced a couple times, it's simply an open house where we can bring friends, fans, local community members, you know, one and all, to just come right up, pet these horses on the nose, let us tell their individual stories, and they each have a story. So this summer we had our four horses. They were a special four because they were the four we'd rescued through this rather difficult situation in the spring, but they were being shown off as ambassadors of the big herd. And the whole concept is really just to be easy, low-key, casual, fun, and just get people looking at horses, talking about horses, feeding them treats, and petting them on the nose. And from there, our work gets a lot easier, and it's honestly just so much fun. So this was our second year of doing the Open Barn program, and gosh, it was awesome, because our venue, as you mentioned, was just so lovely. We had this tremendous partnership this year, for which we're profoundly grateful to the folks at Bloomfield Farm, which is just a couple miles out of town. It's just next door to the polo fields. It is gorgeous. The barn is just to die for, beautiful. The horses are so happy in the pastures. And the cool thing about it was that, as you saw, it was a polo barn. And folks who listen, who are horsey, may know there's a longstanding adage that horse people are A, a little crazy, and B, kind of stuck in our silos. So you often don't get polo people mixing with the thoroughbred people. But because Bloomfield opened their doors to our four horses this summer, they really opened the door for us to partner as horse people, to come together around these horses. So not only did we get to show off our four TRF herd ambassadors, but we got to show off all these cool polo ponies, of whom many are thoroughbreds, and two of their favorite, you know, top string polo ponies in the Bloomfield barn are retired thoroughbred racehorses. They have the tattoo, they have their race record. So there was all this cool magic happening just by getting people at that barn talking to one another, even down the aisle, polo to thoroughbred folks. And then bringing out the families, bringing out the kids, all ages came out to meet our horses. And we did them just to kind of capitalize this. We did four of them over the course of the summer, two in July, two in August. They each had a little bit of a theme. Pete, you were a star at the Welcome Back Racing Fans on July 29th. That was a beautiful day. It was the best weather we had all summer. And we even had Channel 10 News come out. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned to all of your viewers and listeners that that Pete was, as his, not only good on voice with the podcast, he's terrific on camera. And Channel 10 filmed him talking about the racehorses, the importance of the horses to the horse player, and the piece is just a superstar piece, and we put it on the trf.org/players page. So all of the ITM listeners need to go see Pete in action with the horses, because you were great. And that kind of thing just kept happening. Each one of the open barns had its own sort of set of magic and drew out different people. And I want to make another mention at the same time on the open barn front, that last one that we did was on August 26th, and we sort of closed out the summer. We called it our thank you barbecue, and our friends at Bloomfield, especially amazing Cuco, worked the grill like a champ.
He's awesome. He knows what he's doing back there. Yeah,
you tell about the menu, because that menu was amazing.
It was wonderful. It was basically carne asada, right? It was just beautifully grilled, beautifully grilled beef on the big open, on the big like double open grill, wonderful accompaniments made by Cuco and the team there at Bloomfield Farm, and something that was one of my favorite meals of the summer. And it was great. We had the team from Fox come out. They were inspired to do another segment on the TRF, from what I understand. How did that? Yeah. I haven't seen that one yet. How did that one turn out?
Yeah, no, that was just so magical that because thanks to you, Pete and JK came out, brought Greg and Terrence from Naira. And as we sat there enjoying this gorgeous evening, looking out on the fields, you know, they all said, we need to film this. So the piece has now run three times. It ran on the Sunday and Monday last days here in Saratoga. It actually just ran again yesterday. And it was an opportunity to sort of blend a couple of our storylines. So, I do have the link to that on YouTube, which I can get to you if you want to maybe put it in show notes or something.
Yeah.
because it kind of it gave us a chance to do a few things. We were able to show the farm, which is just beautiful. We were able to show the four horses that we had with us all summer, with a real cameo spotlight on Call the Iceman, who was one of the four rescues, who really just, they all flourished. But Iceman's just the handsomest horse ever, with the one sock and the star and the red bay. And we were really hoping, as of that filming, that he would find his adoptive home by the end of the summer. And so even Lafitte put in a little plug on the first broadcast to say, you know, take a look at Iceman. Well, sure enough, on Friday of last week, so this thing ran Sunday, Monday, Friday, he was adopted by this awesome young woman who lives in Connecticut, who's going to do 3-day eventing with him.
Fantastic.
And when they ran the piece yesterday, Greg got to say that good update.
That's so cool.
I mean, really awesome things happened, and it didn't even really take all summer to germinate. Just getting the right people, seeing our horses and talking about them, it just moves the needle. And that's what this whole collaboration is doing, Pete. It's awesome.
Well, I know a lot of the listeners are curious about the trajectory, and they want to know, not in a weird way, but they just want to know where the money goes and what happens. And you glossed over it a bit, but these were horses. I saw the pictures, Kim. They were not in a good state when they were rescued. You know, we don't need to get into the particulars of how they got there, but I just have to say, this is, to me, just the perfect emblem of the work that you guys are doing and where the money that the TRF listeners have been donating is going to help take these horses who looked, you know, like they were in a really bad place and get them back to not only where they're healthy and pasture sound, as I think the right way to put it, but where they can actually be ready for a whole other job and career, and getting to see those demonstrations and hear that happy ending. I mean, folks, this is what it's all about. And when you give to TRF, these are the kind of stories you're enabling and futures you're enabling when you do so. And it's the great and tireless work of Kim and the training team at TRF that's making it happen. But it doesn't, they don't get to do what they do unless we give. And that's part of what's been so satisfying in this partnership. And for me, hey, if I can go and yap on a TV for a couple of minutes and give that horse player perspective of how important it is for us to give back, I know I feel that way. It's been a real sentiment in the contest world from players like Brent Sumja, Michael Baychuk, these people, Joe Corey, another I'll specifically shout out, but so many more. And so to be involved and to be able to just create this pathway for players to give back and be able to relay the some of the happy endings here on the show, it's just, it's so satisfying to me, and very, very happy to be a part of it. And there's going to be a lot more to come, I think, Kim, in terms of some of the events we've got going on. I mentioned Michael Baychuk before. When he heard about the Gumbo for Horses event, his first thought was, you know, he's a Louisiana guy, obviously, and his first words to, and I know he and I have talked about cooking, and I know he knows his onions as far as that goes. Why didn't you call me? Well, you know, I want to be a part of this. I think there's people already looking to next year and maybe trying to find a way to be part of Gumbo for the Horses. I'd love a little bit of an update on how those events went from your perspective and what you're thinking going forward as far as this connection between Gumbo and horses goes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yes. Yeah, I think we've definitely created a thing, and now it's a thing. It's Gumbo for the Horses. Who knew? Who knew that horses loved gumbo so much? But they do, let me tell you. So lots of thoughts. Lots of thoughts on all of that. But let me just say, while you were mentioning the support of your listeners, who have been amazing and have helped us, they're coming through constantly. I just want to say to everyone listening, when you send those gifts, they come straight in. There's like a little email notification, and the notes that you're including with them are just like perhaps more precious than the dollars. I'm not going to say we don't love the dollars and we need the dollars. We always do. But when I get a note from Nancy and her comment says, thank you for all you do. And then I get one from Steve, who said, from a loyal listener and a big fan of JK and Pete, thanks for all you do for the horse players, fans, and the sport. I mean, this just keeps coming in, and it is, talk about like magic is happening here, and just want everyone to know that when they send a gift, any dollar, it goes right to these horses, and send that message of why this matters to you. It really makes us feel like we are in it together. We are raising the sport of horse racing, because we do all love these animals, and we all have a role to play And it can be multiple roles. It can be the ambassador, like Pete. It can be the chef, like Mr. Baychak wants to be. And it can be these donations, which go straight to Hay. So there's just, this is such a cool thing that we are doing. And I'm so honored to be a part of it. And I think when you talk about the gumbo, I will come back to the gumbo. There's this another magical, I'm really into magical this morning. It's Monday. Maybe it's a magical Monday.
Monday,
it's when someone does something good, it inspires someone else to think about what they can do to do good. And that happened all summer long. And it started with the notion of the gumbo for the horses. So not only did we host a great event on July 30th, thank you, Pete, host with the most. We got sponsorship from My Racehorse. We got sponsorship from Capital OTB. And we got folks like Mr. Baychak offering to do gumbo. We then had Chip and Eric Guillot bringing their gumbo up from Louisiana and doing that in August. And we even have a third gumbo. I guess that will make it maybe we'll make the third gumbo of the summer when Kendrick Carmouche is going to cook gumbo on the backstretch at Belmont as an event for the TRF in September. So this idea that folks, whether it's gumbo or something else, we also welcome all kinds of other ideas, but that people go, listen, here's something I can do that will bring people together around the message. It'll bring people together around the horses and give us a chance to raise money, which is always what we need to be doing, that they eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. there's just the sky's the limit. So yeah, we are super ready to start booking all the dates for next September. Because of course, at this point, or next summer, at this point, we start counting down how many days until the meet opens. So, I very much want to get that Gumbo for the Horses event booked again. And we welcome the talents of Mr. Baychak for sure. And all those who want to join us.
Let me take a shot. Now we didn't discuss this off air, so I could always go back and cut this part out. But
okay.
you mentioned the Kendrick cooking at Belmont. Is there any availability for, if there's somebody listening and they're in the New York area and they were willing to make a certain donation, is there any more room at this event, or is that one pretty much fully locked down at this point?
No, you know, I wondered if this might come up, and we have not scripted this for those who are listening. I've been playing, you know, my interesting game of communicating with all kinds of fun folks in the horse racing world. We have actually narrowed this down to a date. Therefore, it's a real thing. It's happening on September 29th, the Sunday after the, what is that? Is that the Jockey Club Oaks on the Saturday? But the Sunday, the 29th, is the day. I think there's room. Let me just say, without having a lot of organized thoughts about what that looks like, there is, if there is interest out there in the world, I think that there is going to be room for, let's say, 4 to 6 folks who might want to join in that event. I think I can confidently say that. And then the question is, how do we turn that into some kind of fun fundraising game that gives folks a very interesting behind the scenes intimate, it'll be an intimate dinner with Kendrick and his family, Maggie and Tom Morley and Grace, and this lovely couple who bid on the dinner at our Barbecue at the Barn event. And that's the genesis of it, but all inspired because Kendrick said, I want to do gumbo too, just like the gumbo makers are a pretty competitive bunch, I think. So
everyone from Louisiana clearly thinks they make the best gumbo. It's one of these things. They're very prideful about it. And hey, if we can tap into that competitive spirit from our Cajun friends and raise money while we're at it, why not?
Absolutely. And you and I are pretty much game to eat it, right, Pete?
Oh, 100%. I haven't
totally
met a gumbo I wouldn't eat. So we're in good shape as far as that goes.
Yeah. So just know, maybe we'll tease the listeners today and say, I think there's an opportunity. So be thinking about September 29th. Maybe then you and I actually have another call to figure out how we make that like accessible. And I'm sure it could be done right through the players page on our TRF website. It's just a matter of how do we do it? Do we do a, I don't know, but I'm sure it's possible. So let's leave it at that and come back to it. Okay.
Another event we don't have on the calendar yet, but I think will be happening soon. Keep ears to the ground, listeners. But there's no reason we shouldn't do another one of the charity contests. We partnered with Derby Wars back in the spring. Very successful. Had a lot of fun. Michelle Yu winning the day for that one. A lot of the players, too, making donations of their winnings. That was a great unexpected thrill that happened. So keep ears to the ground about that. I have a couple other questions for you, Kim, before I let you go today. The first one will be about upcoming events that are actually, unlike these ones that were sort of helping make up on the fly, ones that are actually scheduled and people can put on their calendar. What do you got coming up for people who want to be involved?
Well, thank you for that. Yes, because while we do love celebrating what has happened, we are totally up to our eyeballs and planning what's going to happen. And the fall is a very busy time. It's actually a critical fundraising time for us because just thinking of the weather and the seasons, we start switching our horses from the grass they've been eating all summer to the hay they'll need to eat all winter. And it's just an expensive time of year. So we keep that in mind as you're feeling generous, thinking about fundraising, that the dollars go straight to hay. So in the fall, the focus for us on the TRF team turns a little bit southward for probably all kinds of good reasons. And Maryland is going to be a very busy place for us throughout the fall. So listeners who are in Maryland actually have a number of opportunities to come see us and see our horses. Starting this weekend, actually September 15th, which is Sunday, we are having our grand opening of our brand new TRF Sanctuary Farm in Maryland. This is actually our second farm in Maryland. It adds five horses to our herd in the great racing state of Maryland. And the open barn is from 1 to 5, and all the details are on our website. It's a really charming farm, and these horses are just ready to do exactly what the ones you met this summer are did, Pete. This is an open barn in the same model, very family-friendly, treats and photos and horses that want to be educators and show what a 20-year-old horse looks like after he's had a racing career and show what he can do as he moves on. So that's Sunday, September 15th in Maryland, actually Tawnytown, Maryland, which is, again, a really pretty part of the very pretty horsey state. The second thing happening in Maryland is 1 month later on October 19th. That's a very big day in Maryland. That is Maryland Million Day. Yep. And we have an Exacta play on October 19th. We have our open barn at the TRF Second Chances Farm, which is in Sykesville, Maryland. That's very unique. It's very hard to, as you can imagine, access our Second Chances programs. They are hosted on the grounds of correctional facilities. They're not open to the public. However, twice a year, our Maryland program is able to open the doors and welcome families and neighbors and friends to come meet the six horses that live there and to see just the most gorgeous barn. And these horses all have awesome stories. So that'll also be on our website. It'll be like 10 to 2 on October 19th. And I will be at that. And then I will be dashing over to Laurel because thanks to the great support of the Maryland Thoroughbred Breeders Association, we will have a presence at Maryland Million Day, probably a table somewhere in one of those beautifully renovated spaces at Laurel Park. And so folks who are coming to Maryland Million Day, please stay tuned. Either watch our website or Pete will keep you updated. There's a chance to meet our team, both our farm manager from the Second Chances program and the Sanctuary Farm will be there. And these are fun things in Maryland. So that's Maryland's keeping us busy. I'm on my way there on Saturday. But just because I still have the floor, I'll tell you that Kentucky is not far behind. We also are planning some really cool things in Kentucky in early November around the Keeneland and Fasig-Tipton breeding stock sales, because this is our 20th anniversary year for the big farm there at Blackburn in Lexington. So don't have dates on those things yet, but they are coming soon, and we will be there looking to meet folks and introduce them and ideally bring them to the Blackburn Second Chances program where 60 horses live right smack in the middle of Lexington. So
very cool.
Things to keep on the radar. Thank you for letting me share all that.
I'm glad you did. And you mentioned the Second Chances program. That was going to be my last question. I'm always looking for updates on what's going on. I think it's one of the things that makes the TRF so special, this idea of second chances for both equines and humans through the yeah. correctional facilities and the horses who are rehabilitated and or just end up spending their days there. And that's a story one day I want to get some audio on and have an opportunity yeah. to tell some of those stories. But I was just curious if you had any update beyond, you know, you mentioned the events coming up, but any stories to come out of the Second Chances program, where we sort of stand as we head to this final quarter of 2019?
Yeah, well, it is. It's where our heart lies. This program is our ground. That's our keystone of our magic. So maybe a little bit of a recap, not a recap, but a touch point is that we had a really special opportunity to meet with the Dave Miller, who is the former superintendent at Wallkill. He's actually featured in that Nyra Fox piece that we'll give you that link to. But he was there for 10 years, and when he speaks about the impact of these horses on the men, it is, you know, it's straight from the horse's mouth, as you would say. It's the guy who ran mm-hmm. the prison for 10 years who's still talking about how important this program was, honestly, in his career as a corrections professional. So that was cool, and that is caught on. The great Terrence and Jay did a great job catching that on the Naira piece. I am hoping, I'm going to go ahead and tease listeners, that maybe they'll get to hear this from your own horse's mouth. We're working on a date to get you to Wallkill this month. I have all fingers and toes crossed, and I'm feeling like this is going to happen. So that's a cool update, but we will leave everyone hoping they're going to hear you talk about this directly. The thing that I have to put out there, just in the spirit of like an exciting fall, we're all fired up and ready for everything that comes next. We will, perhaps by the next time I get to speak with you on the air, we will have two new, brand new TRF Second Chances farms in our stable, as it were. We currently have seven that are in seven different states. We are going to add our eighth state in a very important racing state that does not yet have such a prison program, but actually has horses on the ground today. I just can't announce it yet. That's going to be happening in a very timely way, very, very soon. Super exciting. So stay tuned. And then we, at the same time, have horses on their way to our first Second Chances program in partnership with a juvenile justice program. That's super, super cool and exciting, because that's working with young men 12 to 18 before they've actually got a felony record, where these horses can not only give them a second chance, but actually redirect them down a different lane. And, oh my God, we're just so excited. I can't wait to tell you all about those things as soon as they're official. They're ready to go public, but they're coming and they're happening for sure.
One last thing before we get out of here, Kim, you met a lot of new ambassadors this summer. I know there was one story in particular you wanted to tell.
I did. I just have to say that we now know why JK is so good at being an ambassador. It's because his mom is amazing. And I had the chance to meet JK's mom. The picture I posted of the two of them together, her rocking her TRF t-shirt in the paddock bar, it basically broke the internet. If you must go to our Instagram feed and find it. She's so cute. She's so awesome. She's ready to find ways to support the TRF in San Antonio. And this idea of inspiring ambassadors just was all boiled down into one awesome package in meeting Mona this summer. So thanks for making that happen among all the many things.
Thank you so much for all of those updates, as well as that summer recap. What's the best place for people to go to look for the upcoming events? Is there a specific events page over at trfinc.org?
Yep. So I would say, first of all, send everyone to your page first. Go trf.inc.org/players. And then when you're on Pete and JK's page, you'll see the upper navigation bar has sort of the rest of the website. Events is smack dab in the middle. So it's
perfect.
Like right above your picture, and it's events, and it'll keep all these things I'm mentioning will be posted there. So all those details are easy to find. And we appreciate folks poking around on the website and thinking about how they'd like to get involved. We welcome all and every support. And I thank you, Pete and JK, and even Drew, who I got to meet this summer, for everything you've done to help us spread the word.
Oh, he's been very into the cause as well. Everybody here at the In the Money team encouraging people to check out and donate. That link once again, trfinc.org/players. Kim Weir, thank you so much for your time today.
It's such a pleasure, Pete. You have a great week, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Cheers. And that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. I'd like to thank Nick Tamaro and Kim Weir for being my guest today. We'll thank JK in absentia. He will be back later this week. Most of all, I'd like to thank all of you, the listeners, for making this show so much fun to do and for your continued generous donations to our friends over at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. Hey, everybody, just wanted to give a word for our latest partner, Stats Race Lens. This is a product that is definitely worth checking out. You can even get discounts if you use the promo code STATSITM. We're talking about customizable PPs with comprehensive research abilities, video replays, advanced search and notifications, access to Stats True Odds, handicapping angles, and back testing. That's what Scott Coles used to help him win the NHC this year, and he's talked about on this show. It's mobile and tablet friendly. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. And make sure you use the promo code STATS
ITM. STATSITM.